You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Peaches Gillette, and this is a continuation of a prior interview last fall when Peaches and I spoke, but we broke the interview up into mini segments because we were doing fundraising at the time, and we didn't get to complete the full 2 hours. So now we are going to complete it. And Peaches, what I'd like to know is, I know that you have a take on race relationships and how to foster more authentic and more, muscular race relationships that actually engage people and get things done. So just tell us a little bit about that work and what you see as the issue right now that we need to be sensitive to.
Yes, there are a couple of issues, and I think that one of them is my approach. I think that I approach the race relations issues through a very, very grassroots angle, which is to get people to sit down and have conversations about their experiences so that we can build empathy and understanding about what we are going through with white people, and also what white people are going through, because they are also caught in this web of craziness of racism. And often people come into race things at this point wanting instructions on how to not be racist. And that is not what I do, nor is it what I think you can do. You can get all the information, but I can't make you not be racist. You have to internalize more than just what you read. You have to internalize whatever your core of humanity is and work that through your body and your systems of thought. And that will help you become less racist or anti-racist or non-racist. Because you can't teach somebody not to be a racist. They have to undo their own racism. I can help guide them in that way. Yeah.
And it is also a very particular dimension on what it means to be an equal human being. Mm-hmm. And most of us mouth equality, but we have no clue what it means to see no one as inherently inferior or better than ourselves.
Yes, yes, yes. So I think that people often are, I think I have a job to do, which is to just be open and honest about that and be very transparent and say, this is my angle. I am not the warrior carrying, you know, the rocks and the spears. I am the person who's going to sit down and say, let's do this together. I'm not fighting you as a white person. I'm not fighting Black people. All I want to do is try to bring us together to a table and share a meal, so to speak. You know,
right.
I think that's hard for people because we are in this void of like pushing really hard to fight and dismantle and destroy. And I think the energy surge is in that direction and not in the direction of sitting down peacefully. So it's a tricky way to do it, but I believe in what I do. And so I'm going to stick with that.
And you know, the energy surge is felt both by Black folks who are just kind of fed up, and with white folks who are frustrated with, well, didn't we do this, and what do we have to do? But we realize it didn't work. But when you talk about sitting down and having a conversation, and you really said a meal, this is not polite conversation. This is like full contact conversation that isn't violent, but it is emotionally, it will move you around.
Yes. It is honest. Yeah. There's nothing else that comes through me. It has to be honest in terms of what you're feeling and in terms of who you are, no matter whether you're Black or white. What do you really feel? Do you feel sometimes hateful towards white people because of the history of what has been done in this country? Do white people feel like I'm really struggling with seeing Black people as being equal? I want to have a conversation that's really honest and in depth about who we are, because all those things that we hide in ourselves will stay tucked away and they will manifest in ways that we don't want them to manifest. And we will go right back to the beginning. So I'm trying to help tease that out in, I don't want to say a gentle way, but in a rational way where we can sit down and actually listen to one another. You know, when we're standing up and protesting, and that those are wonderful things to do, and I've done it myself, but what we're not doing is we're not engaging in dialogue with one another. Right. I could be standing next to a person of color or a white person and never, ever speak to them when I'm standing and protesting. This right. is changing right. that. This is changing that.
When one of the things, well, describe what you do. You've referred to it, but you haven't described yeah. it. Walk us through that experience or the experience that you have either had or that you hope people have.
Yeah. What I do is organize workshops, and they're writing workshops. And there's a reason for why they're writing workshops. And I try to bring people of color and white people together. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And what we do is we have a topic, and that comes out of the experiences of racism. And then we take time to sit and write about them. Now, the reason I love writing, and I think writing is good, because it gives you a moment to really think. You don't have to think about responding to somebody at the moment. All you're doing is thinking through your own feelings and putting them down on paper. So you're really walking yourself through your own emotions and getting a chance to put them down without having to fire answers or responses to somebody else. The other side is that we come back together, we read to one another. And in reading to one another, it means that you have to sit and listen. And we don't respond, we don't critique, we don't respond to what's being said, we listen, we absorb it. And then at the end, we might talk about what the essence of what went on meant to us, not pointedly at one person for writing what they wrote. And I think the process in itself can be a very healing process and a soothing process in a lot of ways, especially talking about things that are very difficult.
And so what are the sorts of difficult things? What happens to provoke healing?
I think that the environment, even though it's on Zoom, which is a tricky way to do things, I think that we together, and I am able to create a space where people feel comfortable, where people feel like they're not being judged for what they say or do, that nobody's critiquing what they're going to say or do. And we all come in there knowing that we are trying to walk through this peacefully, that this is not a debate, this is not a conversation, this is not an argument with somebody else. And I think that that in itself takes some stress off people when they're in groups dealing with race, because often you sit and you feel like, okay, I'm on the spot. Are they going to ask me that question that I don't know how to answer? Or if I answer it, am I going to be wrong? And this does not do any of that. And I think that that's what helps it become a healing space.
How did you discover working this way?
You know, it's so many years of doing writing myself, my own writing, and finding and realizing that writing is very meditative. You know, I never realized that until I was writing and writing and writing. When I wrote my book of poetry, I realized that I'm sitting in my own internal space. No one's pressuring me to say this or say that or write this or write that. And I'm just finding my deepest words and being allowed to just put them on paper. It's quiet, it's meditative, and it gives me a moment to pause from the hustle and bustle. And I thought, wow, this is a very interesting way to have people come together where they can have those moments of a sort of silence, really, mm-hmm. with one another. A moment to internalize their own spiritual selves and to bring that out on paper without any pressure at all. And I thought this might be a nice way to do race relations, considering my goal is to create peace amongst one another. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And so I experienced one of your workshops, but my sense is that people come together for what they anticipate will be a fairly charged, or at least the uncertainty of knowing how it will play out, because you are the only person who knows everybody or has met everybody beforehand. And that you keep it to roughly equal numbers of persons of color and white folk. And In the introductions, you know, there's a chance to kind of put what you can put safely out. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little bit of talk time about the issues or the things that might be addressed in the writing time. And so it's a really kind of a toe in the water sort of thing around people that you don't know and don't know how to be with, and you're not expected to know how to be with.
Yeah. And prior to the workshops, I generally send out letters and, mm-hmm. and expectations and things so that people don't necessarily walk in, they go, okay, what do they want me to do? What am I going to be caught in? Because the issue is never going to be easy. Really, it doesn't matter how you craft the workshop. The conversations, the issues, the things that come up are never going to be easy. They hurt. They're hard. You have to face yourself in a way that you may not have done before. So I crafted very carefully in terms of what we don't do there and what we're expected to do there. That we're expected to engage. The writing, I think, helps people engage very differently, you know.
Right.
Because you're not left to sit alone and say, okay, I'm not going to speak now.
And the primary engagement is with the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the rest of the time, or when we speak the writing, but the rest of the time is mostly listening. And listening to the very structured framing that you have to start with, and then simply listening to how people responded in their writing, and very brief response to the general event later. I want to go back to something. Mm-hmm. You said you prepare people. You spent a half an hour on the phone with me trying to walk me through really getting clear about the difference between economic class and racism. Because having grown up in the quality of poverty that I grew up in, it's really hard to disentangle those two, especially given the incredible rates of poverty among communities of color.
Yeah.
But that helped me to walk into the space, and it's also helped me to see issues in a different light since the event. But it meant that I could come into the space ready to listen to others with a different set of ears.
Yeah. I care about how it happens. I know, as a Black person, I know what it can feel like that to expose things that have really tortured you. I would imagine that happens in the same way when you grow up poor. It doesn't matter whether you're white or not. There are some things that are just like, they just take the scab off and expose the wound too deeply sometimes. I also know that it is not an easy task to bring Black and white people together. There are many, many white people, and certainly liberal white people, really see themselves as wanting to make changes, are on board, right?
Right.
Black people are not necessarily in the same frame of mind, because they're thinking, you know, what, now you're on board? Like, there's a whole lot of emotional stuff that goes into that. So I spent a lot of time also on the phone with some of the Black participants who thought, like, why in the world would I want to do this with a white person? So it takes a lot of, it took a lot of preparing. I think that from that experience, I know better how to do it. I know that the first letter I'll put out, because I'm planning another workshop that I'll put out, will be even different. When I did send out letters, I actually wrote separately to white participants and the Black participants to make sure that there weren't things that were said inadvertently that would be more painful than it needed to be for someone,
on
both ends, really. So it's not easy. So now the issue becomes getting other groups of Black and white people to come together, because Black people are like, they're kind of like done, you know, like in a lot of ways. But I believe very strongly that I cannot sit back and not participate in changing the racist horizon here. because it's not just about me as a Black person. Racism, that is the crux of all of it. But racism affects every person of color, every person of color, Asian people, and I'm working for everybody, not just for me, you know?
Right. And if we really look at it closely, it's written into relationships with folks who are Jewish, with folks who are from Southern Europe, with folks who, you know, who are from Italy, or I mean from Ireland, because they all, but some were able to pass into the white side after the Civil War, where they wouldn't have, and that was, so what you have caused me to reflect upon is the way in which we have not handled the issue well for 400 years, but certainly for 200 years. Mm-hmm. And what I have been reflecting upon is that in the lead up to the Civil War, we were, the white folks on both sides were driven more by self-righteousness than by any real relationship with persons of color.
Yes.
And when we had the killing of 750,000 mostly white men in the prime of their lives in that war, and people went back home after having said, now we have done this great thing, but they didn't have a relationship with the people. And my guess is that in the grief and the anger about the deaths and the losses, people who really had not the degree of racism that they would come to, you know, in the aftermath of the war, through grief and rage and anger, that drove a level of racism in the North that we hadn't seen prior to that.
Yes, yes.
And it also drove a level of sentimentalism in the South. And what we're fighting here is unresolved grief for people who did the wrong things for the right reasons.
Yes, yes.
And as a nation, we have not faced that.
Yes.
And your work is uncovering these stories of torture and grief that come up in unexpected ways.
Yes.
You know, two of my great, great, great uncles died in the Civil War, but not of warfare directly, but of disease.
Yes.
And unsanitary conditions, which is where most of the people died.
Yes, exactly. It's a fantastic example, because that's what happens when all of this stuff is around you, this war, this hate, this evil. That's what happens. We become collateral damage, even when we're not the people who want.
Right. And the rigid morality of the battle hymn of the Republic was the clarion song of liberalism. And liberals have not owned their participation in the driving deeper of hate.
Thank you. I'm so thankful that you said that. So thankful. Very thankful. That is a tough, tough conversation to have. It really is.
That is the space I live in. Yeah. I'm from a border state.
Yep.
I'm from a tradition that had mixed race people in it. I myself have an ancestor from the Congo born between 1750 and 1820. Yes. I do not know the story.
Yes.
Yeah, I will someday. But my whole religious tradition was in that mix. And I can feel it.
Yes.
In the things that are not said, and the things that are overemphasized, and in the things that have been lost.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry I'm preaching here, but
no, that's okay. And so much of what you were just saying is still existing. It's just like those are the things that are unresolved that keep bubbling up and bubbling out, and you know, and we have to do something different. We have to do a bunch of things at the same time, a combination of things at the same time. That's real. You know, there are reasons to go out and be angry and protest. That is true. But we cannot leave out the other pieces where we are actually coming together. You know, people, this is my feeling. I see so many people fighting anti-racism, anti-racism. That's the mantra at this point, who don't have any relationship, which is what you were describing in the Civil War, who have absolutely no relationship with anyone of color. And not only do they not, they don't even know how to have a conversation with a person of color as if they came from some other planet. Right. Right. I'm trying to bridge that.
Right. And we have these symbolic measures, such as the removal of the monuments in the South.
Yes. Yes.
And the removal of names. But we also, yes, if we were really honest, we would remove all of the Civil War monuments from the North.
Yes.
Because
yes,
they were as misguided in reality.
Yes.
And they were built at the same time.
Yes, absolutely.
And
I didn't even think about that. I'm glad you said that.
But when we start digging down, mm-hmm, we have a reckoning, or we leave things, but we leave them with a clear telling of the complexity of the pain, because most Southern states didn't leave the Union in a hurry. They took more than one vote to get out because their people were not committed necessarily to slavery or leaving the Union.
Yes, yes, yes.
And in the politics of the moment, people become more rigidly identified with the 51% that happened to win, or mm-hmm, the 60%. Than the 30 or 40 or 49%.
Yes, yeah. It's a tough battle. It really is. It's a tough battle. I'm also trying to move us a little closer to, and this is also difficult, the concept of, and I'm not saying this from a religious perspective, even though it has roots in it, the concept of forgiving one another, mm-hmm, needs to be brought into the picture. That if we can stand with our arms folded, with our backs to one another, and be pissed off and angry and chant anti-racism, we are not going to get anywhere like that.
Or we can be in parallel play, but never interacting.
Yes, yes, exactly. And this is what makes me nuts. And this is what I'm trying to change. I want people to come together and say, what was your life like? I never even knew. I never even heard.
What is, since the point of this is forgiveness, what do you mean by forgiveness?
I don't want to be flip about it.
We can
say
go
to
deep.
You, it, you know, I know whether you, Eric, are connected to people who owned slaves somewhere down the line, mm-hmm, whether you, Eric, have inherited some of the mindset of racism. These things are things that in a lot of ways are done to you. They're not things that you said, oh, by the way, I'll decide to be a racist. They're done to us. And so when I say forgiveness, it's an understanding that we didn't bring this on ourselves necessarily. You did not bring this on yourself necessarily. I didn't bring this on myself necessarily. If I were the kind of person who hated you, I didn't bring that on myself, but we can change that. We can change it separate from one another. But if we want to bring the world closer together, we have to change it together.
But we don't know if we've changed it until we have tested relationships with one another and found that we work.
That's why we have to bring it together.
Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. That is exactly.
Yeah. We can mouth forgiveness until the day is over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And that's what we do. I mean, I see it all the time, but it's shocking in a way to me, for a lot of reasons, just because of the way I grew up, where of course I experienced tons of racism, but in the city it's very different because there's a lot of ins and outs of blacks and whites and work environments and things like that. And even friendships, whether they're perfect friendships or not, as opposed to being someplace where you can see very clearly that there's a segregation.
There's a complex choreography in a city that doesn't exist in mm-hmm. some other, or in cities that are highly dynamic. You grew up in New York. Mm-hmm. That's a different, but if it were a more sedate city, maybe St. Louis, the segregation might have been more rigid and less complex choreography.
Yeah, no, even, and when I've traveled, it's like when I, you know, the first thing for one reason, because I travel in a black body, right? So when I travel, my eyes are always open. Yeah. And I look and I go, wow, this is really amazing. I see this, you know, I see like neighborhoods that don't touch each other. They don't cross lines. They like, I remember being in Jackson, Mississippi, and it's like, and my husband was white. Jackson, Mississippi, and there are people who are like, who are literally shocked to see us as an interracial couple, because they don't, because in general, that doesn't get done. And if it does get done, it's very quiet and kind of tucked away.
Especially when you did it, but now interracial couples are the fastest, largest growing group of married types in this culture.
Yes, but not in every place.
That's right.
That's a difference. Right.
Yeah. Let me see if I got this right. We didn't necessarily bring on ourselves, though we may have begun to reinforce some of the racist practices or the hateful practices or the whatever. But the forgiveness means not holding that against another person so that you're open to a relationship.
Yeah. You could, people could be held accountable.
Right.
That's different than holding something against somebody, right? Right. You know what I mean. Yeah. And that's just the way I think. I sometimes feel like I just happen to be crazy like that. I really believe that we need to come together in a very different way, in a more loving way, in a more forgiving way, so that we can get this work done. We can't get this work done if we're standing apart. We just can't. We can't do it.
Right. And we'd come together with forgiveness, not because we even feel good about each other.
Right.
We may feel like shit.
Right.
We may feel like whatever about ourselves or about them. But actually, if you come together in that moment and you're honest that I'm here because it's the better thing to do and I'm not happy.
Yeah, that's right. And then you could work on that piece.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel very strongly about that. Right. And it happens to be the way I grew up. I grew up in a neighborhood in New York City. I happened to grow up in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which was a white neighborhood. We lived in a brownstone that one of the very few black families owned in Park Slope in the 60s. So we were this hub of a very small number of black people surrounded by whiteness, fine. In that, though, the beauty of it, especially as being a child, is you find love and friendships and companionship and communion. And so I've crossed those lines, those color lines, a million times in the most loving, rewarding ways in the world. I also happen to be one of those children who grew up being very loving to people. So when I started experiencing racism, it was really devastating. I couldn't understand how somebody could hate me when I didn't do anything, especially as a child. And I thought, and that feeling that at the point in my life made me think like, there is no reason to even be alive. Mm-hmm. That feeling is something that I understand very well. And I want to let other people know I understand that feeling. And let's talk about how, if you want to get through that feeling,
right,
without self-destructing.
Right. One of the issues that's, I think, particularly a distraction among white folk is that we need to find the common values, the common humanity. Each of our experiences is so unique that what we need to is be precise. And in the struggle over our own experiences, we will grow strong together, not because we destroy each other, because the struggle never takes us that far, but without struggling, honestly, we never get strong.
Yeah. It's true.
And in that struggle is peace.
Yes.
It's a dynamic peace.
It's not a passive peace. No.
It's not a passive piece. It's a dynamic piece.
Yeah.
And it's scary to people who want to be able to control everything.
Yes.
The privilege to say, this is peaceful. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, nobody gets that right.
Yeah.
Black or white.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is life.
Yeah.
This is it. If it weren't race, it'd be something else. Trust me.
It is something else. We just, the issue that we are facing in this moment is race. We've had it a long time,
That's right.
But there are a ton of other issues that we haven't faced for as long as race.
Absolutely. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate it in other people. I appreciate the struggle. And I appreciate sitting down together and saying, oh yeah, I get it, or hearing somebody saying, yeah, I get this, you know, and we can go through this together. We could talk about this, and we can see ourselves as being more similar as human beings than dissimilar,
right.
You know?
Right. But the universe looks different to each one of us because we are situated uniquely.
Yes. That's a beautiful part of things.
Yeah.
We can bring so much more to one another because of that.
We see what the other doesn't see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Peaches, it has been absolutely wonderful to continue this conversation and to get mm-hmm. to know you. And you brought a piece that we're now going to close this expanded show with. Do you want to tell us why you chose it?
I think you could tell by now that I love country music. and this woman has a beautiful voice, and the song is called Mr. Tin Man, and it is a song about heartache, basically, in general. And I understand heartache. and I love the melody and her voice. And so I chose this song.
Yeah. Thank you, Peaches.
Thank you, Eric. I'll talk to you again.
You can have my heart.